Blog Talk Radio.
Everything is going to be all right. You're listening to Tippy Talk. Time now to sit back, relax, listen, and enjoy the moment. Newborn is the official band that provides all the music for Tippy Talk. To hear more of their music, you can go to newbornband.com and enjoy their wonderful sound. And now it is time to step into the Tippy Zone, where we explore the other side of reality. Side that allows you to reshape your life, step into your power, and connect to the fact that we are all one. Welcome to Tippy Talk, where we go from where you are to where you want to be. I'm your host, Tippy Feldstein. Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to Tippy Talk. Time now to just relax because we have a great show planned for you that I think you will enjoy it, and I think you will actually also learn something from it. So this is one of those things that you will enjoy and you will learn. And our guest today is Michael Harris, or better known as ML Harris. And we're going to talk about a specific book that he wrote calling Understanding Men, What Women Need to Know. I kind of got a little bit confused here because I can see here that he penned a lot of books. And that definitely makes him an author. And if you want to see the list, then you can go to his website, which is mlharrisauthor.blogspot.com. You want that link, let me know and we will go to you. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. But ML Harris is much more than just an author. He's an artist. He's a relationship coach. He's a photographer, a photography specialist, and even more stuff than that. But really, we don't have enough time today to cover everything he's done. And doing so, we're going to focus on the book, which is Understanding Men, What Women Need to Know. So before I say anything more about him, let me read you one of his quotes, which will give you a good idea of what kind of person we're talking about. Okay, this is him talking about himself. I've had a busy 4 years of writing and getting published. No, that's not it. No, and I wanted to read you that. He's not going to give you a good idea, but here's a great idea, okay? If you go to his website, you'll see it yourself. So it's, hey, everyone. Hope you're all doing well and content. I say content because a long time ago, I quit chasing the fallacy of happiness. I found it to be most fickle of all emotions. So I began seeking contentment. Occasionally, I must remind myself of that. Happiness. And the rest you can read yourself. But that gives you an idea that we are going to be talking to someone that is extremely honest and extremely thoughtful, because that really shows that he thought a lot about what he said, and he's not just saying, I wish you all to be happy. And that's a quality these days is not very easy to find. So one more thing I'm going to tell you about ML Harris is that he's currently working on a new nonfiction book titled Revelation Knowledge of the Holy Bible. And it's a commentary of the Bible, which he has studied for 40 years. And it should be published by December 1st, which is very, very soon. So I'm very, very excited, and I'm very happy to welcome ML Harris So, Michael Harris. Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
Tippy, thank you for inviting me to be a guest on Tippy Talk, and I feel honored to be here today. And I guess my internal wish and hope for your audience is that there's someone or someones or many out there who, just by listening in today, can receive maybe the help that they need to get them over the hump, or a hump that they're having, like a speed bump in life. So, I mean, maybe I should start by telling a little bit about how this book came about. Because my first love is writing, even though I'm a professional photographer, my first love is writing. I started in college writing, and I love to write novels. But I have 8 grown daughters and a few female friends, platonic female friends, who had been contacting
me
for...
Excuse me. You said you have 8 grown daughters?
I have 8 grown daughters, yes.
8.
I'm very
okay.
blessed, and I have 12. I have 12 grandchildren.
Wow.
So I'm very blessed. Yeah.
Nice.
So the way the book came about, one of my friends who I was coaching about relationships, she said, you need to write a book about this, but you need to write a book for men because men just don't get it. And my response to her was, even though I'm a man, was, yeah, but, you know, we men, we don't think we have any problems. We wouldn't read something like that. And what I really need to do is write a book for women to tell them about us. So I wrote the book for men first, and nothing happened with that. I got it published, but nothing was happening with that right away. So I started in on this book, Understanding Men, What Women Need to Know. And it started impacting the lives of women in positive ways because it kind of turned their way of thinking and looking at things from the way things are in society today to the way that they should be in order for them to have a successful, happy, long-term, committed relationship. And the funny part of it is the book for men is selling. It's my top seller in Europe. I mean, the men in America, no. But in Europe, it's especially in Saudi Arabia, for some reason, I sell books over there. But the women's book, what I've done with that, I've correlated it with personal telephone coaching based on the women mm-hmm. getting the book. And it's only $6.99. I made it the price. I tried to keep it to the price of a salad if you go out to have a salad for lunch. And then they read that book, and that's what I give them when they contact me. I say, okay, look, here's a link. Get the book. When you've read the book, let me know. Well, they can generally read that book in one night. And it's a workbook, by the way, with pages for them to fill out. And it's only like 122 pages, so they can do it in one night. I wanted to keep it brief so that everyone would have a chance to fit it into their busy schedule and then start implementing the things that are in that right away. And I coached a lady today who called me, who I've been coaching regularly, who was married 22 years. Her husband died. She's now 60 years old. She hasn't been married for 3.5 years. And she was on Match.com and just running into a lot of things she didn't want, got the book, started implementing the things she learned in the book, and now she's got a guy that she thinks she's going to be her next husband.
Wow.
That's what excites me the most. That's really what gets. That's what really turns me on is when I see results in women, their lives being changed in a positive way, and they're learning. What I say in the book is I'm going to teach you the secrets that men don't want you to know.
Right.
You know, they don't want you to. They probably, if men would read that book, they'd go, that son of a gun. You know, but it's, I have 8 daughters. I have 8 grown daughters. So I'm looking at it more from a perspective of what a dad would want his daughter to have for a guy. That
right.
sort of thing. Okay. So that's kind of my intro, and I'll shut up and let you ask me questions.
Well, I do not want you to shut up because then we're not going to get there. But
okay. All right.
But basically, but you said a few really important things. First of all, you said that you kind of wrote the book with your daughters in mind. Is that what you mean?
And my female friends who were kind of in between relationships or had some bad relationships, and I had been coaching them on the phone, and that's how I got into relationship coaching, was just kind of a fluke, just helping female friends that I really thought highly of. And I could see that they're what I call, I have an expression, and I use it a lot with women, not derogatorily, but I'll just say, honey, your picker is broken. Because they've picked maybe two or three guys that just didn't work out. And they go, yeah, but I had chemistry for them. I was so attracted to them. It's like, yeah, well, okay, we need to fix that. How's that working for you? So right away, I get them into my book, which kind of, you've read it. So it starts from way back the 18th century about the courtship process and how it's changed over the years, and where women have kind of dropped the ball, and they've kind of taken up what men want, and the courtship is out the window, and now they just date, and they go on a date way too soon before they even know anything about the guy. So I put in there a rule of having three coffee dates before you go on a real date. And those are progressive, what I call progressive coffee dates. So, you know, the first time you meet someone, it's kind of you swim at the shallow end of the pool and you keep the conversation like, oh, where are you from? And tell me a little bit about your family and where'd you go to school and that sort of thing. Then coffee date two, they don't even have that if they're not interested at all in the guy. But if they go, well, yeah, I kind of, we'll see, they have a coffee date too. And progressively the questions become more personal. And by the third date, very personal. And if he says, well, I don't feel comfortable answering that question, then I tell them in there, then you can say you're permitted and allowed to say, well, thank you very much for your time. It was nice meeting you. Shake their hand and get up and leave. Because the last thing a woman wants entering in, I'm sorry?
That's dramatic.
Yeah, but the last thing that they want is a guy who's secretive. In fact, they should even, if they decide that, especially if they have children at home, underage, under 18 children living at home, they need to do a background check on this guy. And if he's not willing to lay down his driver's license, social security, date of birth, and all that by that time, then he's not a candidate that's viable. He may be hiding something. So, yeah, I kind of am educating women about men. It's not, I don't want them to think that all men are bad. It's just that here's what I told one of my own daughters who was had met a guy and she wanted to know. She asked me questions. She said, Dad, how many guys out there are good? And I said, okay, let me put it to you this way. If you went into a banquet room of 1,000 eligible men, 100 of them are going to be good. 10 of them are going to be great. So what you have to do is narrow the field down to the top 1%. And 10 of them are just going to be exactly what you need, but you kind of have to learn to wean them out quickly because you don't have time. People are busy today. Women are busy. Some women are working two jobs, or they work a job and then come home and they have children, and it's a never-ending thing. They don't have time, you know, so they have to learn how to wean out the ones that are not qualified. So I call it a job interview. They're interviewing a guy to see if he's qualified. If he's qualified to even make it to the next level, which is a date. And then in the book, I explain the difference between courtship and dating. May I give you an example?
Of course.
Okay, so here's an example. This is what I hear a lot from women. Guys call, or they text them, which is a real no-no. But they text them and they say, hey, would you like to get together sometime? It's like there's no plan, no nothing. It's like, that's really a chicken guy who's trying to feel her out to see if she shows any spark or any interest in him at all. And if she doesn't come back, then he thinks, okay, well, I guess she's not interested. So what would be a better way for him to do it in this day and age would be a real man would text and say, hey, I know you're really busy, but I'd like to talk to you on the phone. When would be a good time for me to call so that we can talk? That's a really good guy. I mean, a guy who is very considerate and very thoughtful. And then she has the opportunity to say, yeah, well, I'm not really good on – I had one gal saying, she goes, I'm not really into this talking on the phone until I get to know someone. I said, cool. Then you have the right to text him back and say, I'm not really much about talking on the phone stage. How about we meet for coffee? And that's how she sets up the coffee date. Or if she's not interested, she doesn't even respond to a text like that. Like, hey, can we get together sometime? It's like, oh, yeah, bye. So this book puts the onus on men to really step up to the plate and become courtship meisters. They have to learn the fine art of courtship, making a woman feel worthwhile, making her feel valued. And the way he does that is by planning and by letting her call the shots early on. Let her be in complete control. When's the coffee date going to be? What time's the coffee date going to be? Where's the coffee date going to be? And what are the questions? And he should not be full of questions himself. He should be there to listen, learn, and answer questions. Right?
Yes, I got it. Because you said so much. You said so many things. And also there's something that you said that I have to ask you about. But, okay, so first of all, you talked about asking personal questions by the third date. Is it okay to ask personal questions on the first coffee date?
Yeah, that's a coffee date. And those are questions about sex and things like that, habits. You know, have you ever been arrested? And
so
another type of sexual questions, which are in the book, the types of sexual questions to ask because a woman has right to know.
Okay.
And the guy should be very willing to do that. I've had women ask me extremely personal stuff, and I usually chuckle and go, okay, so here's the answer. And sometimes they're just like, I can't believe that you're so straightforward and open. Well, yeah, you know, this is not a dress rehearsal. Life is not a dress rehearsal. I don't want to waste my time, and I want to waste her time. If I'm not what she's looking for, I would like to know ASAP.
Yeah, I think that helps. So another thing that you said that is a little bit conflicting to something that my friend is doing, but I'm beginning to think that you're right, that I tend to give people another chance. It's not necessarily a good thing. But I have a friend, and you said, let her be in control, where you're going to have the coffee, you know, where you're going to have the date and all that. Well, my friend, actually, if a guy calls her up and asks her where she wants to go, what she wants to do, she says, I need a guy that's in control. I'm never going to see him again. So he's definitely out right away. What would you say to her?
I would say that that's her privilege to want a guy like that, but she should go slow to try to find out if he's that way. In other words, okay, so what, she wants a guy who's really in control, then she's looking for the man in the book that's the controlling type man. This would be an alpha male, for example.
No, she's not looking for a controlling type of man. She's looking for a man. It's not going to call her up and say, so what do you want to do? Where do you want to go? She wants him to just arrange it.
Yeah, well, that's it. What do you want to do? It would be when you get a little further on in the book, it talks about the dating process. So once he's passed the hurdles of the three coffee dates, then it's up to him to say to her on that third coffee date, I really like you. I'd really like to get to know you better. I'd like to take you out sometime. Now, her response should be as such. Sounds good. Come up with a plan and get back to me. Make him come up with a plan.
Right.
And then he has to come up with a plan. And, you know, because typically here's what guys do, and this is what I'm hearing from women. I'm not making this stuff up. But this is what women are telling me. Typically guys do is, how about we go out and get a bite to eat and maybe go to a movie? Okay, well, she can do that mm-hmm. with her girlfriend. So what he mm-hmm. should have found out about her in the three coffee date process would be, if, you know, by the third date, could I ask you a few questions? And she's going to go, sure. What do you like to do when you're not working? Well, do you have any hobbies? And she's going to tell him. So let's say she likes kayaking, or she let him know. Maybe she just dropped a little hint. I got into this paddle boating, and I'm kind of enjoying that. And I took a couple of lessons, and then she moves on to another subject. Well, then he should file that in the back of his mind so that when he comes around to a date time, he can go plan something that will interest her, kayaking or a boat or somewhere where she's going to feel safe, in a public place where she can have fun with him. And that's not going to be a typical type date. And then on that date, it's not going to be romantic or anything. It's just going to be an enjoyable time together and where she doesn't feel pressured, you know, to perform or do anything for him. It's just all about them together having fun. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, absolutely. So, yeah, that's a good way of vetting someone and immediately and not wasting time with someone who you know already the sign is right there up front that that's not what you want.
Right, and you'd be amazed at how many women tell me, gosh, I'm really finding out by the second coffee date, and I'm just saying, hey, it's nice to meet you. Thank you very much for your time. I don't feel like we're a good fit, but thank you. And I've had several women tell me that, and I said, what's the response? They just shake their head and say, you know, I think you're right. So it's like not wasting time or having to go. And another thing is you meet up for the coffee date. She meets him there so that she can look at her watch if she's bored and say, oh, my gosh, I have to run. And then she can get up and leave. She's not stuck there if she goes on a dinner date with a guy, like the first date is a dinner date, and now she's got to go there and she has to go through the appetizer, the meal, the dessert, and yawning all the way, and she feels obligated to stay there. So she's not going to have that dinner date with a guy unless that's a guy she's made up her mind she would like to go to the next level, which would be the courtship level.
Right. Which is really really good. That way you don't waste too much time. And if you do find someone that's compatible, you go for it right away. So it's a good thing to do. I like that a lot.
Mm.
I like
yeah.
it a lot.
It's getting back to the morals of the... it's getting back to the morals of the 18th century, which would be in the book, you know, I talked about. You mentioned this a little bit earlier when we talked. It's the courtship stage where the man actually had to go to the home, ask for the father's permission to see the daughter, and then if the father gave him permission, then he would see her at church or maybe come over for a Sunday dinner in front of the whole family, and then after dinner they were permitted to go out on the swing on the porch to get to know each other better. But they were never without chaperones for that first year of their relationship. And then he couldn't come back unless he decided he wanted to ask the father for her hand in marriage. And during this whole time, there's been no making out, absolutely no sex or anything. They're getting to know each other as human beings who are members of the opposite sex. And it's a beautiful thing because then they can determine if this is the person that I really want to spend the rest of my life with, not based on sex.
Because this is the person I want to have sex for the rest of my life with, or this is the person I want to be the rest of my life. It's two different things. So there is something that you talk about in your book, which is what a lot of couples these days do. And it's in the beginning of the book, and it says, in less than 5 minutes, we were both down to our underwear. She took off her bra and, wearing only panties, walked over to me, hugged me, and kissed me, and passionately said, you can do anything you want with me, but you have to tell me you love me first.
That was
and
a personal story
to,
that I told.
Right. And
yeah,
I want
that's
to
a personal
I want to talk
happened.
About this. Right. I want to talk about this because there's something that I just recently found out about this phenomenon that I thought was new, and I don't know, maybe you've heard about it, but there are people, I guess, that can just go out and have sex for the sake of having sex, and there are people that need to have an emotional bond before they have sex, and now they have a name, a special name for those people that cannot have sex unless they have an emotional connection, which I didn't know, but it made me start thinking that there's something wrong with me, because if I don't have an emotional connection, I can't have sex with someone. It's really repulsive to me. And it has nothing to do with values or wanting a relationship or not wanting. It's something that I've never felt. It just felt weird, you know. So
what if I were to tell you that's the proper way? That's the proper way.
No, I understand that. But are you aware of the fact that there is a name now for people who don't have sex without an emotional connection? It's called something sexual. Like you have heterosexual, gay, and now this is called something sexual. Were you aware of that? Because I just heard about it. I did not even know it exists.
No, I'm not aware of that. Are you telling people, are you saying about people who don't have sex?
No, about people who say they cannot have sex unless they have an emotional connection, which you're saying is the right way to do it, which I agree with you. But now they have a name for it as if it's a category, like being homosexual or heterosexual. Now you are something emosexual, emotional sexual.
Oh,
so that
yeah,
you can't have sex.
I've heard that. Okay, yes, I have heard that. I have. But see,
right?
Isn't it
That's
interesting?
Weird.
Isn't that weird that they have to put a label on the right way? But it's also enlightening, and it makes me feel good that people are getting it. They've had these empty, shallow relationships where they've been used sexually, and they're learning now that, hey, that's empty and shallow, and it just doesn't – it not only does it not fulfill me, it's detrimental to the soul. It's destructive. And I do believe that I see a shift, a paradigm shift, going that way. That's very good. I'm glad to hear that.
Well, I'm also really would love to see a shift that way, but the fact that they're naming it as a phenomena does not necessarily mean that there is a shift. It means that's a category, that it's just as valid as any other category.
I'm only going by my personal experience of working with women, where I'm seeing a shift because they're coming to me very frustrated and, you know, like, what's wrong with me and why can't I find someone? And it's really not what's wrong with them. It's kind of the society, and they're going to have to turn things around in their own life, at their own viewpoint, where they make new rules and they set new boundaries. And if a guy is not willing to respect those boundaries and those guidelines, then you just, what I call, 86 him. Goodbye. He's just disqualified himself to even be a prospect.
I like that, but like I said, my friend that I had issues with her for doing that, cutting guys out if they're just not behaving in a certain way right away, the problem that I have with it is, because you're right, we live in a kind of a society that has no clue on how to form a relationship. So guys don't know these things, what you're saying. They don't even know that would be a better relationship or like how to act. They've never been told that. All they've been told, let's say, by watching movies and TV is we got to try to have sex as quickly as possible. And all those, basically what you're saying, are not even true. They're kind of lies. And if that's all they know, and they behave a certain way, that doesn't necessarily, to me, mean they're a bad guy. It means maybe they don't know. How do you find out if you cut it off right away?
Yeah. I agree, but in the book I talk about this, Tippi. It's we're like little boys in men's bodies. We have to be taught how to have an emotional connection. Women, it comes naturally with most women. With men, it's foreign to us. If we feel vulnerable, we hate that feeling because we correlate vulnerability, and I talk about this in my book, we correlate that with weakness. And men, we don't want to feel weak because it emasculates us. So we have to learn what women know. There are two in chapters 12 and 13. I talk about thinking and feeling for women, and I say this: women need to learn how to incorporate more thinking into their relationship with men, and men need to incorporate more feeling. That's where balance comes, where women can teach us how to feel and get in touch with their feelings, and we can help women with the thinking. Here's an example. Hey, honey, what do you think about that so-and-so who's running for the state senator? And she goes, well, I don't have a really good feeling about him. He's kind of icky, and when I hear him talk, he comes across kind of creepy. And the husband says, but what do you think about him? She just told him how she felt, and that wasn't – he didn't understand that. He was, well, you know, you see what I'm saying? And it's like, well, but what do you think about him? And then she goes – she kind of scrunches her forehead, and she goes, what? Do you like him or not? No, I don't like him. And then she turns around and she goes, well, how do you feel about that guy? And he goes, oh, I think he's going to be really good for the economy. I think that he instituted thus and such and so, and it really did well and blah, blah, blah. He's thinking about it and she's feeling about it.
Mm-hmm.
You see how far
apart? Yeah,
I know you talk
about your book. That's why I brought it up. Yes, that's right, exactly. And that's why I'm bringing it up. There is communication that somebody needs to smooth out. And you're saying it's...
And that'll happen from the women. The women are going to be the teachers of that because the women are already there. So they're going to do it. And in the chapter on vulnerability, I kind of share with a woman what she needs to do when a guy feels vulnerable, he feels weak, how she can help him embrace the vulnerability the way women embrace it. I use the example in there about when I had sex with that woman and I told her, oh, my God, I don't know what just happened, but I don't ever want to do that again. And then her response was, I feel that way every time. Every time. She felt that way every time.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, oh, my God. Oh, my God, how do you deal with that, feeling that way every time? Well, because she's embracing that connection and that emotional vulnerability. Us men, that doesn't come naturally with us. We have to learn that. And it takes time. It takes a strong woman willing to work with us and share with us. And then when we're weak like that, put her arms around us, pull in close and say, honey, I love it when you're vulnerable like this. And then he probably looks at her and goes, you do? She goes, oh, yeah. I just love it. It makes me feel so much closer to you. Now, he files that in the back of his mind, and he goes, okay, then. Well, then I guess it's okay then for me to, I guess it's okay for me to be a little vulnerable around her. See what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. That makes so much sense.
That's how it works.
So that explains to me the kind of relationship coaching that you do, that you really understand how women think differently than men think. Did you know all that when you got married? Well, you were married, right?
I was married to the most wonderful woman. She was 19 going on 30, and I was 21 going on 12.
And did you know everything that you know now? If you would have known everything,
would have
been different?
Oh, yeah, it would have been. She's an amazing woman. She remarried. I told her when I divorced her, I said, trust me, you're going to meet a great guy, and don't you play the martyr with me. She said, but, I mean, I knew she would because she was so amazing. And so she did, and very happy. What I'm still learning, but I've learned most of what I've learned in the last 12 years.
And what
really helped me was getting a platonic female friend who taught me how to trust and open up again. It was like a big onion with a lot of layers, and she was patient with me and started peeling back the layers. And she's happily married. I actually did the photography for their wedding. She's married to a great guy. And in fact, she called me an hour before we got on the phone here and just, hey, what's up? What's happening? Want to touch base with you and everything. And that woman is really the reason that I started on this path of this relationship healing, both for men and women, because
right.
it's really just about healing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, especially some people need a little more healing, some people need a little less, but definitely, absolutely.
Amen. Amen to that.
I totally agree with you. So, yeah, I guess we can really talk about that forever. But
I know.
If somebody really wants to get more from you, if somebody wants to continue getting to know you and what you do, where can they go to find you?
Okay, first of all, you have the website, the blog on your website. You have the link. They can go there, and then that'll take them to where my books are available. If they want coaching or want to discuss coaching, I require that they read that book, and they can go to a mm-hmm. bookstore and order it or go to Amazon and get it. It'll take a couple of days for them to get it on Prime, and it'll take them one night to read it and go through the workshop pages and then text me their number, because I don't pick up numbers I don't know because I get so many calls and texts. Text me and say, hey, I'm Barb. I got the book. I read it. I heard you on Tippy. I'd like to talk to you about relationship coaching. And then here's what I do on that. I don't charge. I let them give a donation to me, because I found that charging, I just didn't feel good about charging. So they can give me a donation and through PayPal after I do that. And, you know, they can call whenever they may not need to call again. They may get what they need. You know, maybe they want to ask me some more questions. So that's how I do it. And my phone number, I think, is listed on your website too, right?
Yeah. So let me just give out the blog spot. It's ML Harris Author. And it's very easy because Harris is Harris. Author is Author, and that would be mlharrisauthor.blogspot.com, or you can always click on the link. But if you're listening to it when you're driving, don't click on anything. Just do it later. And also you have an email address that you can contact you through that. Do you want to give that out?
Yeah, it's mlharrissr, like senior, because I have a son who's a junior. mlharrissr@msn.com. And that's also
now you know
on that blog. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. It's on that blog spot.
Yeah. So you have you really have all that information on that blog spot, and you have a list of a whole bunch of other books that you wrote that I suspect are really good. You have three nonfiction books, and you have 16 fiction books.
And my books, my fiction books, one of our mutual friends asked me, how would you, in a nutshell, describe your books of fiction? Okay, they're chick flicks in a book. They're really more of what we're talking about now, all about relationships of women. And, of course, there's some really cool guys in those books, too, some really cool guys. I have those available too. And for people that like to be entertained, my books are, one of my books, 530 pages, and one of our mutual friends read it in 3 nights. She said, I couldn't put it down.
Wow.
It's all about relationships and helping people understand, you know, learning by these fictional characters who become real, you know. So, I mean, that's my first love, but I wrote this book really, for society, hoping that it would help some women, and I think it has.
I think it has, especially these days when the confusion about how relationships should work is so big. And so I can't let you go without asking you to do something, but I will ask you in a minute. But basically, to summarize what you're saying, is when you start a relationship, you should be very picky, but very picky in a systematic way of what you're willing to accept and what you're going to walk away from. So don't be afraid that you're never going to meet anyone if you don't hold on to everybody that comes your way. Let them go if it doesn't match. Keep on going if it matches. That's a really important tip for women, because a lot of women, when they meet someone that's halfway interested in them, they're afraid to let it go because they're afraid nobody else will come along that they might want them ever. So if you just picked up that today, it's already a lot that will change your life. But if you read the entire book, I think you really could change your life in relationships.
Well, the book has in there, it's a workbook. So you have a deal breakers list, and then you have a list what you're looking for in a man. And then there are seven different types of men to explain to them what men are like and kind of put us in slots. Okay, this is a number two man and a number three man, and so on and so forth. Anyway, Tippi, thank you so much. It's just been, I could talk to you forever. You're just so interesting and pleasant to talk to. Thank you so much.
And so before you go, I was wondering if you can do something for us, for
right.
Everybody that's listening. Okay. Can you do your Clinton thing?
My Bill Clinton?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I
like for
do,
everybody to enjoy
I
that.
I can do. Well, I don't know. There's a couple of those that I told you that are kind of off color, so I don't know how appropriate. Okay, so here's one. Hillary, I don't know why they got so upset with me with that woman, that Monica woman. And Hillary says, Bill, it wasn't the woman, it was the blue dress. Well, I had that blue dress cleaned, for crying out loud.
I love the way you do that. You really do sound exactly like
that. Yeah, Bill pickles me. He's really an interesting guy, isn't he?
Interesting, yeah, very, very interesting. And so is his wife.
Very, very. Well, I could go on and on and on. I could probably do a 10-minute stand-up routine just doing Bill jokes, Bill impressions on stage, but some of them are for adult audiences only, so we better leave those off. Right.
Yeah, and so another thing I was kind of curious about that you mentioned, that your first love is writing, and my first love is writing too. And I'm really passionate about writing, and I always have been. And I had this dilemma with writing because my first language was Hebrew, and as soon as I could write, I started writing. And then all of a sudden, I had to switch it to English. So I started writing halfway Hebrew, halfway English, and because of that, I had to figure out how to write backwards in English. So I had this whole big thing about writing. But I know exactly when I discovered that I love to write, which was as soon as I learned the alphabet. When did you find out that your first love is writing?
I had always loved poetry. I got a poetry book out of a garbage can in the neighborhood. I couldn't believe somebody threw it away. And it had all the classic poets. And it was a paperback.
Wow.
And I started reading that. And then I started writing poetry. But when I was my freshman year in college, I went to a creative writing class, and he had us write 500 words, I think, on any subject, any topic. And at the end of the class, we handed our papers in. The next class that I went to, the professor held me after class. I thought, oh, my God, what did I do wrong? And he sat me down in front of him, and he said, do you know what you have here? And I said, yeah, it's a story about such and such and so and so. I don't even remember what the story was. And he went, no. I mean, do you know what you have here? And I went, what do you mean? And he said, you've got talent. You need to pursue this. You need to pursue this. Mm. And I transferred from that school the next semester and went to another school where I took another creative writing class. And the professor told me the same thing. So I went, yeah, maybe I do have a little. And I wrote my first novel while I was at that college, which is no longer in print because my fiance is read it, and she thought that I was the main character who had all these women in this book, and she, you know, so that book's destroyed. But then I knew, I just went, someday I'm going to do this. I don't know if I'm going to make money. I don't know. I'm just like Stephen King. I heard an interview with Stephen King on NPR, and she said, how did you get started? Why did you get started? And he said, because I love to write. And that's the same reason I write today. But I love to write. You're probably the same way. Right?
Yeah.
Just
love
it.
To write.
I get so lost. I get into the zen of writing, and sometimes I forget where I am, what day it is, what time it is. I have to look at the calendar on my computer and go, oh my gosh, and I've been sitting there at the computer 6 hours straight writing and didn't even know it. Just time flew by.
Right. Exactly.
So you may want to read one of my novels, and the novel that you probably would like would be the one that's setting is in New York City, and it's called Bittersweet November, and it's a four-volume book. Bittersweet November, and the setting is in... I'm sorry?
Which volume should I read?
Well, if you don't read one, then when you get to two, you're going to go, who's that guy? Where'd he come from? You know.
Okay.
And
so
they're
you have to read
all
one,
about,
two, three, four.
Yeah, they're all about 300 pages, so combined they'd be 1,200 pages. But they're really fast reads. I mean, boom, you can read one volume in a couple of nights or three. You know, I try to write so that you can't put them down. Because that's the way I like to read. When I get a book, put it down, it's like I'm in the story. I'm in there. I'm like a voyeur in the room watching these people. And just fascinating. So that's the way I write. I write it as a voyeur. You know, I'm in the room and I'm watching them. They don't know I'm there. And, oh, my God, am I involved?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. 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 Thank you so much, ML Harris. It's been wonderful chatting with you. We've come to the end of our
time
together here now on Savory Talk. We are looking forward to seeing you again soon. It has been great pleasure speaking with you, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Don't forget, we want your story. We're here to listen to your story and share your gift. It can be any story. It does not have to be an inspiration or a special, because we here at Savory Talk know that your story is special and we want to hear it. You've been listening to Tippy Talk. My name is Tippy Feldenstein. We bid you a magical journey and let your talent be your potion.
I know you're busy for lunch, taking pictures of your coffee. Cold feet on the gas, I've been driving too fast, chasing you down like shots of vodka. Every night I'm in bed, you're just a name in my head, and I say it like it's my mantra. Your avian.